Now, what about the new Reformation, so far as Buddhism is concerned? We've had four: Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana, then Chan or Zen. But what about the new one? What about the fifth one? Now, the new one, the fifth one, I feel, is inevitable as Buddhism moves west. As people in the West, whether it's Europe or whether it's America, whether it's even Australia, get to know about Buddhism. And also, of course, as the West moves east, as Western culture, Western knowledge, especially scientific knowledge, even unpleasant things like industrialism and so on, gradually move east into the Buddhist land and the Buddhist countries. Now, this modern world of ours, which is, in terms of thought and culture, we may say predominantly a Western world, is a very secular world. Nowadays, religious approaches, religious terminology, aren't at all popular. If you want to discuss any of the profounder questions of life, so far as the average man is concerned, you can discuss them more satisfactorily and, from his point of view, more meaningfully if you discuss them in secular rather than in specifically religious terms. So this is what Buddhism in the West, or in the midst of Western thought and culture, even out east, has increasingly to do. It has to state itself, it has to state its message or its essence also, in addition to the traditional terms, in secular terms, which are acceptable to, understandable by, people who consider themselves nowadays, as so many do, simply secular. So this means that Buddhism has got to try to put itself across in terms of secular philosophy and psychology, speaking the language of Freud and Jung sometimes, in terms of secular ethics, not saying, well, you can't do this, it isn't allowed, it's prohibited, there's a commandment against it, that won't do. No discussion of ethics on that sort of basis will get you anywhere nowadays. One has to discuss ethics in secular terms. Then in terms, even we may say, of secular spirituality. But if we look through works of literature, works of art, produced by people who are quite innocent, or we may say quite oblivious of any sort of spiritual motive or religious motivation, we can see that there is very often, in the midst of them, in a sense even giving life to them, something spiritual, some touch at least of the spiritual. So we have to be able to use that. We have to be able to, as it were, take these terms of what I call secular spirituality and put across the meaning, the teaching, the message of Buddhism in those terms. Of course, this doesn't mean, this would be a quite disastrous misunderstanding, it doesn't mean identifying Buddhism with secular philosophy or psychology and so on. This would be a complete misunderstanding. It sometimes does happen, of course, in the case of some people who get just a little knowledge of Buddhism and a little knowledge of, say, Jung's psychology. They conclude, well, the two are the same. So instead of talking about Buddhism in terms of Jung's psychology, they get it all mixed up. They talk sometimes about Buddhism, sometimes about Jung, and then it goes just like this. And in the end, they don't know whether they're talking about Buddhism or Jung. They become completely confused and completely mixed up. But what one should do is, knowing the terms, in this case, of Jung's system of psychology, knowing also, which means experiencing also, being also, if you like, the essence of Buddhism, putting across to people familiar with those Jungian terms your feeling or your understanding, your experience of Buddhism in those terms. If one can do this, or as one does this, it's as though a new dimension, a new range of meaning will be added to that language, to those terms, which one is employing. See, language is a very subtle thing, it's a very elastic sort of thing. Now, you can give words almost any meaning that you like. You can take up, for instance, this example comes to my mind, you can take up a term like Jung's archetype. Now, you can begin by using that term archetype in the strictly Jungian sense. But as you go on talking to someone who knows all about archetypes and about Jung's psychology, as you go on talking to him or to her about archetypes, with your own Buddhist knowledge and experience in the background, it'll come about sort of insensibly, almost unawares, that you'll start injecting meanings derived from Buddhist sources into your usage of that word archetype. But since you've already established common ground, since there's already a sort of common basis between you and the person that you're talking to, you're both talking about the same thing, archetypes, he won't notice it at first. Or even if he notices it, either then or afterwards, your meaning will have got across. And incidentally, the meaning of that word archetype, its range, its connotation, will have been insensibly expanded a little. So this is the sort of use which we have to make of these terms derived from these various modern secular disciplines. Using them in this way, they'll acquire, as it were, at least in our little context, a new dimension, a new range of meaning.